Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
From KMOX Sports.
Coming out. Nobody on. Bottom of the ninth.
There's a swing and a drive.
Get up, baby. Get up. Get up. Get up. Get up.
This might go. Got her.
Home run.
Welcome to Sports Open Line.
There's a home run for Yadier Molina.
On America's Sports Voice. KMOX.
All right, great to be with you on a Friday night. Obviously getting you ready for Game 3 of the World Series tonight. And we'll have a mixed bag of things, actually, too. Some non-World Series baseball talk. Some NFL, some college football next hour. Apparently Antonio Brown is signing with the Buccaneers. So we'll see. Probably the best way to look at it, we'll see. I don't know how it's going to work out. His last few stops haven't gone particularly well. We'll talk about that a little bit next hour. Coming up in about 6-7 minutes or so, we're going to bring in Jim Edmonds, talk a little bit about the World Series and what he's seeing as a guy that's had his share of playoff and World Series experience. And then just after 7 o'clock, like 7:05, right before the game starts tonight, we'll bring in Brad Lidge from MLB Network Radio and get his thoughts as another guy that's had plenty of playoff and World Series experience. We've got two World Series champions joining us here on Sports Open Line tonight. Also, later this hour, I want to get into some of what Rob Manfred talked about on the Dan Patrick Show today. He once again talked about the possibility of limiting shifting in baseball. And the crazy thing is there's no evidence at all that shifting is actually taking offense away on the whole. I mean, it takes away some singles. It takes away some ground ball singles that would, you know, normally find their way through. But that's a relatively insignificant number of plays over the course of a few seasons. And I'll explain it all because, you know, instinctively, you know, when you're watching a game with the shift on, you're seeing outs that would normally be hits, right? I mean, you see a ground ball to that side. But what is not being talked about is, you know, that there are more runs being scored now than in most eras in baseball history outside of the steroid era. Production is higher now than it's been in almost any era other than the steroid era. So if we're comparing offense to the steroid era, well, then right now we're on the low end of that steroid era offensive production. If we're comparing it to most of the 90s and all of the 80s and 70s and 60s and 50s, well, offense is more productive now. So I'll explain it all later on. I don't have time to do it now. I would love to be able to break it down for you in this moment. I'm going to save that for a little bit later on. So after I talk to Jimmy Edmonds, we'll get into that conversation. And that may have some carryover into next hour as well, because there's no evidence that changing the shift would do anything but add a few more singles. And again, you know, how much are singles changing the game? Right, I mean, we're talking about things that are supposed to be growing the sport. We're talking about things that are supposed to be getting more people excited about the game. And we're not talking about pleasing diehards. If you're a diehard, this conversation's not about you. You're in. They had you at hello. They have me at hello. It's about the casual fan. And I can promise you this. Casual fans like dingers. They don't care about singles. Not that singles are bad. They're better than strikeouts, but changing the shift will have no impact on strikeouts. None whatsoever. In fact, it would actually encourage hitters to keep on swinging for the fences and being pull happy, because they would get the occasional accidental reward with that pulled ground ball that they just missed a little bit being a hit rather than an out. So the incentive to change is actually greater now than it would be under those. All right, that's a sneak preview. We'll get to more of that a little bit later on this hour, and probably some in the 7 o'clock hour as well. We got World Series Game 3 tonight that we're going to be talking about with Jim Edmonds in a few minutes, and then Brad Lidge right after the 7 o'clock news. And you've got a great pitching matchup set up for tonight with Walker Buehler going for the Dodgers, their young ace, going up against the veteran Charlie Morton. And Morton has had like one of the most interesting careers that you could possibly imagine. I mean, for a guy, you know, throughout what would technically and normally be his prime, had some arm problems and really hadn't figured it out, although there were some moments where it looked like he had. You know, he had a few good years in Pittsburgh where, you know, I think 2011, 2013, 2014, he was pretty good. And then a down year, and then, you know, injuries kind of in the mix in all of that. And all of a sudden he got to Houston and he became something different. And certainly he's been a tremendous postseason performer in his career too, but especially this year and last year too. If you look at these last 2 years, his playoff numbers have been unbelievable, and you're looking at a sub-1 ERA. So he's made 5 starts in the postseason these last 2 seasons, so 2019-2020. He's 5-0 in those 5 starts, and the ERA, I think, is in the range of 0.75. It was 0.90 last year, and it's 0.57 this year. So you know, all you need to know about Charlie Morton is that in the last 5 postseason starts he's made, he's not given up anything. He's given up 2 earned runs in 5 postseason starts over the last 2 years. So that's kind of our jumping off point for tonight's Game 3. And we'll talk more about that Game 3 with a guy that's been around the block a little bit. Jim Edmonds is going to join me coming up next here on Sports Open Line on KMOX. All right, back in on your home for the Cardinals, KMOX Sports Open Line here on a Friday night. Obviously, you know, big time of year in baseball with Game 3 of the World Series tonight. Had a great time with this postseason. It's been an odd year. But certainly we've gotten some great baseball here as part of the payoff in the postseason, and very happy to keep talking baseball with Jim Edmonds, who's kind enough to join us here. Obviously, longtime major league career. You'll see him on Fox Sports Midwest with Dan McLaughlin and the fellas as well during the regular season for the Cardinals. And Jimmy, first of all, thanks for doing this. I hope the world is treating you well. Have you been enjoying the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, I think that these playoffs have basically saved baseball. I think sports in general obviously is in the dumps because of COVID, and the way I look at it is it almost seems like the playoffs have revived the way baseball has been perceived so far. And I'm actually enjoying it. I turn into a fan at this time of the year. So if you can get me to watch, you can get anyone to watch.
Have there been enough home runs taken away by outfielders in these playoffs to suit your taste?
Yeah, I like both. I like the home runs and the defense. So, yeah, guys are hitting more home runs, so outfielders are playing deeper, and we've got some pretty good athletes playing this game nowadays, so it doesn't surprise me one bit that they're going up over the wall.
Yeah, it's great. You know, you got 2 of the best in the game right now, Kevin Kiermaier in center field for the Rays, and obviously Mookie Betts with the Dodgers. And that's not to take anything away from Cody Bellinger, who's a Gold Glove finalist and has brought back at least 1 home run in this series. And I know a throw that he made the other day, Jim, registered at 97 miles an hour. From the StatCast data. So this particular World Series, these 2 teams are really unbelievably strong out there.
Yeah, they're loaded with talent, and that's what you're looking for. I mean, you know, who knows if they're the best 2 teams in the league as far as matchup day-to-day and whatever, what have you, but right now they are, and they're putting on a show. And I just – it's amazing to me every year the athletic ability of these kids are just getting bigger and stronger, faster. You know it was coming, but when it's on display, it's something special.
You know, you're right, and it's crazy. You know, we can you know, with the StatCast information that's out there, we can measure these things. And the change just in the last 10 to 12 years with, you know, the being able to measure exit to be low, but seeing how hard everybody throws, right? I mean, we got shortstops throwing, you know, 94 across the diamond. You've got catchers throwing almost 90 out of the crouch down to second base. Outfielders throwing 100 miles an hour, and of course everybody on the mound that comes out of the bullpen's blowing 98 to 100.
Yeah, that's I mean, we all know that pitchers are exceptional with their arms. And it's funny because if you really think back, most of these guys have probably pitched at one time in their little league or high school career. And there's some pretty good arms out there. I was a pitcher all the way through my life until I got drafted. And I'm sure there's a lot more guys like me out there. But, yeah, like I said, I'm in awe at times, even with my guys watching the strength of a guy like Harrison Bader with the speed and power, guys like that, when they put it together, it's something special. And a lot of these guys that are in this stage right now tonight have put it together, and that's why these teams are so good.
Jim, when you watch postseason baseball in particular, you know, you have a good bit of experience, something like 60-plus games in the postseason. How much different is it when you're hitting in the postseason and you're seeing obviously good pitching in every series? I mean, you don't have bad teams with bad pitching typically in the playoffs. So when you're seeing an increase in talent level on the other side, and obviously there's more pressure and, you know, no fans in the stadium until the World Series, but, you know, it's obviously still the postseason. Still, how much does that battle between pitcher and hitter change in that bigger environment?
Well, people have been asking me this forever, and I finally found someone who could actually put the nail on the head, and John Smoltz said it the other night. It's all about hyper-focus, and right now you're literally focusing on, you know, a small inkling of his bats where you're, mm-hmm. you know what your task is at hand, and you know everything's riding on it. And so he called it, and it's a great name, he called hyper-focus, and during the season, you know, you're facing the same guys. You give a few at-bats away here and there. And, you know, if you face the same guys and give an at-bat away here and there, you know, you have an 0-for-4 day, whatever. You're not doing that right now as a player, as a hitter. And so a guy like, you know, you see a guy like Clayton Kershaw, why he struggles. Why does he struggle? Because guys are like, hey, you know what? You're not getting me out today. You got me out all year. Today is not the day. I'm going to focus, and I'm going to really get down in there. I know you're not trying to hit me. I know you're not trying to do anything special. I faced you before, and so here we go, mano a mano. And that's why I think it makes it a lot tougher on the pitchers during the postseason.
Yeah, you know, it makes sense. I mean, again, you know, there are no slouches when you get to, especially to this level, because not only when you're in the World Series do you have a playoff-caliber opponent, but they've obviously been playing well for 3 weeks to get there, right? I mean, it's the combination of how good you are and then how well you're playing at a given time.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, and it's also who can calm down their emotions, too. You know, the guys that can stay under control. And it's not just another game, but you almost have to play it like another game. So there's that combination of being able to focus, like that hyper-focus, and then being able to take a breath and really understand what's going on and try not to do too much. So if you can combine those two things, man, you can be some kind of dangerous in the postseason.
How hard is it, Jim, to try to do that like over 162 games? I know this year has been totally different, right? It's a sprint. It was 60 games, and now you're into the postseason, so nobody's really had to maintain all of that or maintain an ability to do that from April all the way through until now. Do you think it's any different, any tougher or any easier for the guys that are doing it in this year's postseason?
Well, the first part of your question, doing it for the whole season is impossible. And that's just because, you know, you're going to have the ups and downs of emotions and travel and all that. And, you know, John Smoltz was talking about how he thinks guys give away 10% of their at-bats. And I was willing to bet that it's more than that. And it's not just giving them away. It's just not feeling good that day. You know, things not great at home or travel or in a bad mood or whatever it is. And so it's impossible to be perfect every day. And over the course of the season, there's just no way to do it. But like I said, in this, you know, 1 week, 2 week, 3 week deal, you get the best of the best. You get the best of the concentration. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're seeing right now. And I forgot what the other part of the question was, but you can't reiterate enough how much more special it is right now and how much more these guys are really bearing down and trying to get after it.
Yeah, you nailed it in there anyway. So it was right on the money. And I'm curious too, Jim, because you know the one, you know, I mentioned they haven't had the, you know, basically the 7 month run that you have in a normal season. But these guys all had to deal with COVID-19 and all of these different restrictions. We saw numbers today that they haven't had a positive test in a number of days. Like, you know, that it's been clean. That the guys have been doing their jobs. I know you had your own battle with the whole thing. Are you impressed by the fact that Major League Baseball is really gotten this under control since the early part of the season when the Marlins and Cardinals had their own outbreaks?
Yeah, I think that, you know, a couple things. I think that they've figured out, you know, how to handle it. I think the players have figured out that it's serious. I don't think everyone took it that serious at the beginning. You know, I know we didn't here at home as much as we should have, and then a lot of people got sick. But once you kind of bear down and have, you know, get in that bubble and really pay attention, yeah, I can see that's like with even with my family now, we're being more careful. We're, you know, kids are wiping their hands more often. We're carrying, you know, sanitizing spray and wipes and everything we can, wearing masks. So, yeah, once you figure out as a player that, hey, you're going to lose your job or you're going to lose money or you're not going to play because of you screwing around, I think everyone kind of got on the same page. And, you know, there's a lot of credit to be thrown around. You got to credit Major League Baseball for the efforts. You got to credit the players for their efforts now. Because what the Marlins and the Cardinals went through was not fun. And, you know, and like I said, it was a dangerous situation for everyone. And thank God everyone kind of wised up and figured it out.
Yeah, and I know you and Danny Mac covered it very well during games on Fox Sports Midwest during the season, too. And, you know, because that what that ended up leading to was extra difficulty with the load of games, right? I mean, 53 games in 44 days and 11 doubleheaders. I mean, you know, it just stacks problem upon problem, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's unheard of. And I'll tell you what, you know, like I said, you know, there's a lot of times that you don't have to do this, but give credit to players, give credit to coaching staff. I mean, this was the perfect example of when credit is due, because between the Cardinals, the Marlins, but like especially the Cardinals, because I'm so close to the situation, would you say they played how many games and how many days? Like, that's so unheard of. And for them to be able to keep it together for that whole time and then to be able to have enough players and to be able to pull and draw from your minor league system and what you know, it's not a full system, so you don't have everyone there. And then for those guys to go out and perform, I don't know. I mean, this is what else can you say? It's been a crazy year, but wow. like I said, there's a lot of credit to be given to a lot of guys that made a lot of efforts.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now that leads me to just mentioning the year that it's been, Jim. I know it's been crazy for everybody with COVID and everything that's been going on, and especially in the world of baseball. But it's also been kind of a rough couple of months in terms of, you know, members of the Cardinals family passing away. And I know all of you guys that played for the Cardinals got to run into Lou Brock regularly and Bob Gibson regularly. What was it like when you first got here, noticing those guys around and then eventually getting to know those guys and kind of see how they impact the organization and had for so many years?
Yeah, they were so much fun. I mean, they had so much life, so much energy, so much passion for the game, the old school version of it, to learn a lot from them, to be friends with them over time, to get to know them and their families. It was crazy. It was almost like you could just talk to them and you could sit there and watch those Bob Burns old school videos of baseball. I mean, I was like, I felt like I was living it right there through, you know, talking to Bob and all those guys. I mean, Lou, they had so much fun when they were at the stadium and, you know, they're truly going to be missed. And you say that all the time about people that pass away, but these guys were something special. I mean, Joe Morgan, you know, passed away the other day. There's another guy who's just incredible. I don't know. Maybe that's why they're all in the Hall of Fame, because not only were they great guys on the field, they were great off the field. And it's a shame. It's a shame with all the families and all the people that get left behind.
Yeah, you're right. And you know, again, it's been a really rough, long run for baseball overall. You mentioned Joe Morgan, Tom Seaver, Al Kaline recently. And it's the generation too, unfortunately. You know, there's a lot. It shows you how great that generation was. And, you know, I've always had respect for those guys. I mean, those are the people that I grew up reading stories about. I'm a little bit too young to have seen any of those guys. I think I saw a little Tom Seaver at the end. I saw a little Joe Morgan toward the end of his career in the 80s. But, you know, I didn't get the privilege of seeing Lou or Bob Gibson and, you know, getting to read about them when I was younger. But also, like you mentioned, being around the team, Jim, and hearing their stories. And, you know, I'd never met a nicer person, a more engaging person than Lou Brock. And I never had been more impressed and kind of intimidated by meeting a player than when I met Bob Gibson the first time. and it was maybe just the stories behind it that led to that. But they were such cool guys. And, you know, there's so much to learn from people like that.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head with those two guys. And, You know, it's funny you mentioned those other guys, and I don't know if it was the luck of my era or what, but every one of those guys that you have mentioned, I got to become friends with.
Wow.
And even Al Kaline could walk up to him, talk to him at any time. I mean, guys like Brooks Robinson. I just think that I came into the game right before all those guys and that great generation got older, and they were still around the game. So I've been so lucky to be in the midst of rooms with guys like that and Carlton and just Johnny Bench and Pete Rose and, you know, the guys that have passed away this year, knowing, like I said, Al Kaline and just being able to talk to those guys. I mean, I had a poster of Al Kaline on my wall when I was a kid, and I didn't even know who he was, but this picture was such a great picture of a perfect hitting swing and a follow through with balance and extension. And I was like, this is the coolest swing I've ever seen. I want to put this on my wall. Getting to know him, you know, 20 years later, 30 years later was amazing. And just knowing the history behind it, but you're right. You know, we're going to lose people all the time, but that generation is something special. And I'm just lucky that my generation got to experience it, like you said, to be able to watch it, but to get to talk to them, even if I didn't get to watch them play, has been so much, so amazing.
Yeah. Not to mention the teammates and, you know, having had Tony La Russa as a manager, you've been pretty lucky in that regard, man. You know, Albert and McGuire and, good Lord, you've had a hell of an experience.
I've had a great experience. I was, you know, I got to see some brand new stadiums. I was there for Cal Ripken's game.
Wow.
You know, I broke into the league when the Blue Jays went back to back. I played with Bo Jackson and Mitch Williams and Rick Anderson and Cecil Fielder and Prince Fielder and, you know, it goes on and on and on. Ryan Braun and just, you know, Roland and Joey Votto and just like, just knowing Albert and all these guys, it's just, you know, and now these young guys, I get to go out there and watch them play and kind of teach them what I know. It never stops, and it's so much fun.
That's crazy. Well, next time we talk, Jim, I'm going to have to ask you about some Bo Jackson and Ricky Henderson stories, because I had totally forgotten about those days in back when it was the California Angels rather than the Anaheim Angels. I'm going to have to run those by you at some point, because I got to believe Ricky gives you some stories.
Yeah, they were so good as veterans. I think Cecil Fielder is probably the best veteran that I've played with as far as teaching the game and taking kids to dinner and stuff. But it was just I was blessed to be able to play with a lot of those guys when I was young. Taught me a lot quickly, and it was a lot of fun.
Jimmy, thanks for doing this, man. We appreciate you taking some time out. Obviously, love your work on Fox Sports Midwest, and we'll look forward to hopefully maybe having something close to normal in spring training, and we can all say hello in person and watch baseball in person at that point. But thank you much for doing this. Always a pleasure to get to talk to you, man.
Yeah, I hope that spring training is normal and can't wait to see everyone again. But thank you so much for having me. Have a great day.
Always great to have Jim Edmonds on. And obviously, I'm serious about that. Like, next time I get a chance to talk to him, I got to ask about Bo Jackson and Ricky Henderson as teammates. I mean, it's just like, they're different dudes. I mean, they're completely different, but like, you're talking about icons, man, like rock stars and guys with personalities. And, you know, in the case of Bo Jackson, I know that was near the end of Bo's career, but still just an absolute amazing athlete, like arguably the greatest athlete we've ever seen in American sports history. Always fun talking ball with Jimmy Edmonds. Coming up after the top of the hour news, we'll do some more World Series talk with Brad Lidge from MLB Network Radio. Up next, I want to dig in on a couple of things that Rob Manfred talked about today. He was on the Dan Patrick Show talking about the possibility of limiting shifts, and I'm going to start to explain why it's probably not going to make any difference at all if they limit shifts. In fact, it's probably just a bad idea. Get to that next up. Kevin Wheeler with you here on Sports Open Line on KMOX. All right, a reminder coming up right after the 7 o'clock news. Brad Lidge from MLB Network Radio is going to join me to talk a bit more about the World Series. Right now, I want to spend a little time on the shift in Major League Baseball. Rob Manfred mentioned again today, this time with Dan Patrick on the Dan Patrick Show, that they're going to look at potentially limiting shifts as a means of creating, I guess, more excitement is what the idea is or what the argument is. I'm not sure that, you know, a handful more singles a month is really going to change how people perceive baseball, because it's not little things like that that are going to sell the game to the casual fan or to new fans. New fans aren't going to be like, ooh, baby, there's going to be 60 more singles per month that would get through that otherwise wouldn't. They're not going to care about that. Like, this kind of move doesn't do anything to improve ratings. It doesn't do anything to increase revenue. And what it does potentially is please some old-time fans who get frustrated when hard-hit ground balls to the right side aren't singles anymore, or a ground ball up the middle is hit right at an infielder who's positioned there as opposed to being a base hit like it was for the first 100-plus years of Major League history. Those aren't the people we need to be pleasing. Like, I'm those people. I'm the diehard. I'm the hardcore. I'm the old school. I'm not going anywhere. Look, the shift is a reaction to the tendencies of hitters. The shift did not create anything. The shift is a reaction to what hitters have done. We've seen here in the modern game that there's a premium placed on power. So most power is to the pull side. So most hitters that want to generate power are, I don't want to say cheating to pull, but planning to pull. That's their goal is pull the ball in the air, pull the ball in the air. That's going to be what generates the production. It's going to be what gets them paid. So the shift was the natural reaction to that. And, of course, the advent of analytics is what showed us that this is a good idea. The shift was created, what, 80 years ago? I mean, the shift was used against Ted Williams. So this is not a new thing, but the widespread use of it is really kind of isolated to the last 10 or 12 years. And again, it's a reaction to hitters pulling the ball, especially left-handed hitters who pull the ball and never hit the ball the other way. So what they're saying, what defenses realized was, okay, there's no point in giving them a bunch of cheap singles anymore. We're going to take those away. If you want to sell out for power on the pull side, go right ahead. But we're going to take some of those singles away from you. That's what the shift is. And again, the shift is not going to change the style. Eliminating the shift is not going to make things more exciting. It's not going to get people out of their seats, and it's not going to bring in new fans. The point of any of these changes in Major League Baseball should be to grow the sport to people that are either not into it yet or who are kind of into it but only tune in once in a while. And again, adding 10 extra singles a week league-wide or 15 or 20 or whatever it is. I read in a piece by Joe Sheehan a couple years ago that it was like 500 singles a year are lost. 500 singles. I mean, you're talking about a hit like, what, every fourth or fifth game? Like, it's not something that's going to impact every game. It's something that's going to come up here and there, and it sounds like a big number. But when you consider that that's like in 185,000 plate appearances or something crazy like that, it really isn't a big percentage of the time. And by the way, if you think that hitters need to adjust and learn to use the whole field and all that stuff, they're going to have less incentive to do that if you ban the shift. You're going to actually incentivize the very behavior that they're engaging in right now. The pull, 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 pull. And that's what has led to strikeouts. When you're pull conscious, you're going to get out front early on off-speed, and off-speed's going to beat you. And when guys are throwing 100, occasionally velocity is going to beat you too. Really hard to pull 100 miles an hour on the outer side of the plate. So do we want to incentivize that behavior or just allow the natural things that happen in baseball to continue to happen? And by the way, the shift hasn't cost us offense. Offense has not declined. Runs per game right now and over the last 5 years is higher than the all-time Major League average for runs per game. It's lower than the steroid era, but everything's lower than the steroid era. No other era was even close to that. Runs per game right now is higher than the early 90s, all of the 80s, all of the 70s, all of the 60s, and all the way back to the 50s. You have to go back to the early 50s and late 40s in the non-steroid era to see runs scored at the level that it's at right now. Runs per game. And by the way, the same thing is true for OPS, right? The only time in history that OPS has ever been higher than it is these last 5 or 6 years is the steroid era. And before that, you'd have to go back to the 1930s. So again, early 90s, 80s, 70s, 60s, 50s, even the 40s, all less productive eras than what we're seeing in the modern game right now. So how is the shift limiting offense? It's limiting some singles. I'm going to explain more about this next hour because there's a lot more to this. We got Brad Lynch coming up after the news, so stay with us, man. We got a busy show for you. Plenty of time to get into things. We'll have a little bit of football for you, too, after the news. Stick around. Kevin Wheeler with you on Sports Open Line. All right, back here on Sports Open Line on KMOX. Of course, you're home for the Cardinals and happy to be continuing to talk baseball. And happy to have Brad Lynch with me from MLB Network Radio. I've been a listener and a fan of MLB Network Radio for more years than I can count. And obviously, over the last year or so, I've had a chance to do some work with them and work with all of these guys. And Brad, first of all, have always enjoyed the chances when we've gotten to talk. I really appreciate the work that you and Case do in the afternoons. And I'm happy you're able to join me to talk a little bit more, man. We've been wearing out your teammates there. We had Duke on earlier in the week. We had CJ yesterday, and now we get to bring you in. So thanks for doing this, man. I appreciate it.
Excellent. Y'all, listen, I'm happy to do it. That's definitely a good crowd to follow. but, you know, hey, you know how it is. We have a lot of fun on that show because, you know, it's not just one of these one-hour deals you see on TV, right? We gotta milk it. It's a three-hour radio show. So we got to talk about movies and God knows what else.
Yeah, I mean, get to play games with the jukebox, and obviously you get great guests too. I mean, you guys have all of the best of the best on a regular basis, and you know, as a listener for a long time, always appreciated it. And then having a chance to fill in here and there for Case, it's always been a good time. It feels easy to me, Brad, when I get to work with guys like you, because you guys put in the time, man. I mean, you put in the hours to watch the games and prep, and you talk to so many people. I got to believe that, you know, as you've done this throughout the course of this weird, shortened 60-game season into the postseason, you feel like you got a pretty good grasp on what you've been seeing here lately?
Yeah, you know, I mean, and we have such a great production crew, too. They really make it easy. If we do miss anything, they're all over it. But, yeah, you know, I think what a crazy year it's been, right? But, you know, at the end of the day, if you're featuring the best team from the American League and the best team in the National League, and they're going toe-to-toe, and it's 1-1 after two games. I think we're getting everything we wanted out of this year. So, strange year, but it's the result seems to be where we want it at this moment.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was just talking a little bit ago to Jim Edmonds, and he said, I don't remember the exact word that he used, but he was like, these playoffs have been, like, if not saving baseball, they've been so great after, you know, this weird year that – you know, it's almost like the reward for battling through all the stuff that the players and the team staffs have had to battle through, and obviously fans get to benefit from that.
Yeah, and it's interesting, right? Because you know, sometimes we don't want to jump all over giving Manfred credit for anything, right? But I think the 16-game playoff, you know, this year seems to have worked out pretty darn well. So I gotta say, I mean, some of the rule changes and some of the crazy things we've brought into baseball this year have worked well. They were necessary, and I think the fans are being rewarded. And even though they're not necessarily, you know, they're physically in the seats, although we are seeing, you know, a good chunk of fans getting out there now, it's still awesome to be able to watch this thing go down and the way it's gone down. And I think there are definitely some changes that have happened this year that I would like to keep into the game. Maybe more as a fan now. I don't know if I would have liked some of these things, like a runner starting on second base in extra innings. If I was still closing out, I would not like that at all. But if I was a reliever, but you know, as a fan, I can appreciate the kind of extra sense of urgency and the extra tick of excitement that brings. I think it's kind of interesting to see if that'll continue in the future, but I think people have enjoyed it this year.
Yeah, and you're right about the expanded playoffs. I mean, I would agree with everybody that says we don't necessarily need 16 every year moving forward, but it was the right call for this year. And, you know, Manfred's even not saying 16 in the future. He's talking about 12 or 14. I think it's the way to go. I mean, right. What keeps people more engaged, Brad? I mean, you guys, you and Casey, you talk to listeners and fans every day. What keeps them engaged is their team having a chance. And if you have a couple more spots, your team's got a better chance.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, I think, look, you know, 16 teams, we're starting to, you know, it's fine for this year, but in the future, I mean, we see it in the NBA. You get teams that are under 500 that are literally just like, you know, not getting the job done, and I mean, it's not that they don't want to be there, but certainly don't. They know themselves that they're not a playoff caliber team. And you get those teams in there, and it's too many. However, from what I've seen this year and how things have played out, 12 or 14 is definitely the right answer. You know, it's fine if you're a baseball traditionalist and you don't want as many teams, and getting to the postseason is a tough task.
I get it. I like the way baseball is and the way baseball was. But
yeah.
I think moving forward, we need to be smart about the game. We need to bring in more fan bases, and we need to, you know, do little rule tweaks here and there that get the younger audience more involved. So more teams in the postseason is a good overall move. And, you know, the other rule is getting, you know, a DH in the National League, creating more offense and more energy in these at-bats. I think it's just a fine thing to do. So I think the rule changes have been for the better thus far. And 12 or 14, I'd be okay with either one of those scenarios, 12 or 14 teams in the postseason.
Brad, what do you make about where we are starting with game three tonight? I mean, obviously it's 1-1, which is great because it's kind of, you know, leading us to hopefully an extended series. I'm not truly rooting for either team. I just want as much excitement as I can get throughout the rest of the series. What do you think about tonight, and how do you kind of view the direction that the Dodgers-Rays series is going?
I really enjoy kind of where the series is headed. I will say this. I guess the one beef I have with the postseason this year and what we saw with the Dodgers doing in Game 2, I'm so tired of everyone feeling like they have to have an opener. Like, what is the deal right now? I mean, you don't have to have an opener if you don't need to. I mean, you know, you got guys like Gonsolin and May, and maybe you could even bring Walker Buehler back on short rest to pitch Game 2, but why in the world are we telling starters that have, you know, the entire season they've been trying to stretch themselves out? I know it hasn't been a long season, but they've been trying to figure out, okay, I got to set these pitches up in the first inning if you're Gonsolin so that, you know, my split changeup is effective later in the game. You know, if you're May, you're going out there thinking I'm going to try and, you know, hit my spots and have control and command so I can pitch deep into the game. And then all of a sudden you tell both those guys, hey, you're throwing like one inning. So they get out there, and a guy like Dustin May is just trying to air out 110-mile-an-hour fastballs, and he's missing spots badly because he's so out of his normal element. Gonsolin doesn't even really get a chance to show, you know, how effective his changeup, his split changeup is, because he's not pitching deep into the game. And I just feel like we're just having openers just to have them. Like, at some point, I don't think that makes a ton of sense. I've seen it too much this postseason. I think it's an adjustment. And but besides that, besides my beef with that, I think the postseason's been fantastic. And I think you're seeing two teams that, even though no one would say on paper that it should be an incredible World Series, everyone's going to look at the Dodgers stars and say they should win this thing in 5-6 games. But I think the Rays will push them to the brink, because that's what the Rays do. They don't have the big names, but yet here they are. There's a reason they beat the Yankees. There's a reason they beat the Astros. There's a reason they're in the World Series and playing great right now.
Can I say I'm 100% with you on this opener thing? Like, I like the idea of an opener when it's necessary, right? If your staff's worn down, if in the regular season you just don't have a really good fifth starter, so that's a better solution for you. But, man, these two teams have enough starting pitching. I would say that what it ends up doing, and what I'm worried about in watching this the rest of the series, is how many of these guys that you're using for extended outings out of the pen, or that you're using every day, are still going to have their best stuff and feel good when you get to game 5, 6, or 7 and you need to close this thing out.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, I think one thing the Dodgers don't have going for them that they had in the NLCS was Urias out of the bullpen.
Right.
You know, now you're putting him in as a starter, and he's throwing game four. And by the way, I think that's a big advantage for the Dodgers, because he has just been fantastic this postseason. And he really is a guy with tremendous stuff. So I do like that the Dodgers have that going for him, but it does thin out the rest of the guys in that bullpen. It thins out, you know, kind of what you want to do. I mean, you know, and at this point, if you're the Dodgers, okay, you lost him as a bullpen guy. You lost, I mean, really, quite frankly, are you going to throw out Dustin May anymore in this World Series? You probably won't, unless you're down by several runs. I mean, I don't think, you know, anyone's going to want to go to him in a close ball game. Kenley Jansen isn't, you know, 100% reliable. I know he's thrown better, but it makes you kind of look at the series in a different direction. Like, I actually feel the Rays have a bigger advantage now in the bullpen, you know, against the Dodgers than maybe they had against in some of the other series, is because the Dodgers have had to, kind of what you're saying, mix and match and use guys and expose guys. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens from here on out. But I'll tell you what, if the managers don't allow their starting pitchers to go deep in the game tonight, Walker Buehler and Charlie Morton, then we will never see it again, because these are the two guys that deserve to go deep into the games, that have quick pitch counts, have fairly quick innings, and they're both ready to throw 7 innings. They're both ready to dominate the other team. It'll be interesting to see what happens, but I hope the managers don't give them an early yank, because, you know, we're starting here 3 games in a row now, and those bullpens don't need to be exposed in game one if not necessary.
Now you're a guy that worked some seasons, if I remember correctly, where you threw, you know, 70, 75, 80 games. So, I mean, you've experienced, you know, that workload of being a guy that doesn't just get the ninth inning, but can do a lot more than that and can come in spots and pitch two innings at a time and things along those lines. But does your arm hurt just watching how often these guys are up warming up and then coming into the game, especially these previous series with no off days built in?
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, it's and one of the big things, you know, we were talking to Blake Treinen the other day, like he hadn't thrown back-to-back games maybe just once in the regular season. And then all of a sudden he gets to the postseason and bang, three in a row.
Yeah.
A couple days off, bang, three in a row. So all of a sudden these guys are being asked to do things that they have not practiced for a while. And in the case for Blake Treinen, he threw two innings, I think, against the Braves. So, you know, he was being asked to do things that he wasn't even close to having practiced. And so I think, yeah, for some of these guys, I'm looking at them like, man, you know, this is where it really starts to take its toll, especially in that those seven games in a row where there's no off day. There's no day where you can just sit down there comfortably mentally, you know, and know that, or like at your house and mentally know you have the day off. Like, that day doesn't exist in those seven straight game series. So it is a physical tax, but it's also a mental tax. But, you know, I think that being said, most relievers that have been around, and certainly, you know, guys with the Dodgers, know that they're going to be asked to do things. You know, it's the postseason, it's the World Series now. You're going to be asked to push yourself to the limits. And if this is the point where you have to just be okay doing it, you know, no one needs to ask you how you feel, you know, yeah, when you're warming up that day. Your pitching coach doesn't need to say, you know, how's your arm? You know that you're 100% in every single game.
No doubt about it. So, you know, the Rays are fun because, you know, they don't use the same guys to close, right? I mean, they'll use Nick Anderson in a big spot in the fifth or sixth. They'll use Pete Fairbanks anywhere from the fifth to the ninth. Castillo, the same thing. And their guys, I think, are kind of used to that. If you're the Dodgers and you're looking at, let's say, you know, game five, game six, game seven, and you have a chance to win the World Series, or God forbid you're down in the series but you're leading a game late, who's your guy there? I mean, do you go to Kenley because he's got the history? Is it Treinen, or is it just a matter of maybe who's available and who's rested?
Yeah, I mean, and I guess probably we're assuming that Bruiser Gratterall would have thrown in the game before the ninth inning, right? Because, in all honesty, I think he's probably the nastiest guy of that fan. I'd probably want to have him start a clean ninth inning before anybody.
Okay.
But I think, you know, the ideal scenario, yes, and what Dave Roberts will try to do is, you know, to use Kenley Jansen to have that ninth inning. You know, I think he was going to be a lot more comfortable if Kenley's coming out there and he's got a 3 or 4 run lead than if it's a 1 or 2 run lead. I think if Kenley Jansen goes out there and it's a 1 or 2 run lead, he's going to have guys warming up immediately right behind him in case, you know, a guy or two get on base and Dave Roberts will pull him out of the game. But I think, you know, he wants to get to Kenley Jansen. He wants to be able to use those other guys, you know, Blake Treinen and even Joe Kelly and you know, Baez, everybody before Kenley Jansen. It'll be interesting to see how he lines it up. But yes, I think the answer to that question, Kevin, is that he's gonna try and have Kenley Jansen close games.
Yeah, he's the one I think you probably want to have the traditional clean inning closer setup, where the Rays don't seem to care, and their players are at least used to it based on how these last couple of years have gone. I guess that's kind of it, right? I mean, you experienced the role of being the guy in the ninth inning, and I guess that, and obviously you, before that, you experienced what it was to be the guy coming in when you were needed. I guess, is it just as simple as understanding what's going to be asked of you? And once you're used to that and you know it, you just roll along and go out there and get outs.
It is, and I think that, you know, you have to know. You don't want to be taken by surprise, that's for sure. You don't want to, you know, you haven't stretched yet, and all of a sudden the phone rings, and hey, you're on the bump. You know, but I think, you know, that being said, I think most of the guys on the Dodgers, certainly all the guys on the Rays, know that they need to be available at any time during these crazy games, and it's not like it used to be. I mean, it really isn't. Like, I used to know, you know, when I was at the Astros, when I was setting up, I'd throw in the seventh or eighth inning, and then when I was closing, I knew I was throwing in the ninth inning, but I think, you know, that kind of mentality, certainly for the Rays, if not for a lot of teams in baseball, has changed. And guys need to be prepared to throw earlier and in different spots. And I think, as long as, to your point, as long as you know that going into the game, you're fine, because you can get yourself ready however you need to, stretch early or whatever. It's just the ones that surprise you that are difficult to cope with. And, you know, honestly, the more and more you can kind of dial it in, the easier and easier it is to get prepared. So, listen, if Dave Roberts is saying, Kenley, we're going to use you in the ninth inning to start an inning, or we're not going to use you, you know, because that's our game plan for you, that's where you're best, and that's kind of where, then Kenley Jansen knows he doesn't have to stretch and be ready in the sixth, seventh inning and have that mental tax before the ninth inning. But, you know, it's, so that's why I think a lot of people say, you know, when guys have established clear roles, it's easier. I would agree that it is easier because you only have to be ready for a certain moment in the game as opposed to a lot of moments in the game. But that being said, these guys have now practiced and trained for this thing. The guys on the race certainly understand that mentality. So they have a tougher task, but I'll tell you what, they've been up to it. And when every single guy in that bullpen throws 100 miles an hour, it's a little bit easier, I think, too. I mean, it's pretty dang impressive.
No doubt. Hey, last thing I got for you, and you can be as short on this as you want. What do you think? How do you think the rest of the series plays out? Who wins the World Series?
I think the Dodgers in six or seven. I'm going to probably say the Dodgers in seven, even though we'll probably get a Walker Buehler. Actually, I'm just really cheering for game seven because we'll get a Walker Buehler and Charlie Morton will probably come back for game seven. And that would be just incredible. So I'm really cheering for game seven. But I do think the Dodgers have overall an advantage. Their lineup is just so much more potent. And, you know, I'll never count the Rays out. So I think I'll push them to the brink. But I like the Dodgers finally getting that ring and winning in seven games.
I'm right there with you, man. Hey, thanks for doing this. It's always great when we get a chance to catch up. I'll definitely be listening to you and Casey on Inside Pitch. Well, I mean, like I was going to say next week, but let's be honest, I'm going to be listening throughout the offseason too. So I'll be listening. Appreciate the work you do, man. Thanks for jumping on with us again.
Awesome, Kevin. You bet, man. Great catching up with you.
Always fun times. Thank you. Brad Lidge from MLB Network Radio. Had a little bit of playoff experience joining us on the show today. And, of course, Jim Edmonds in the last hour. Quick update for you. The Dodgers just went up 1-0 a few minutes ago on a solo home run from Justin Turner. And that's where we sit now in the bottom of the first inning in Game 3 of the World Series. All right, I want to revisit this whole banning of the shift thing that Rob Manfred talked about. And I talked about some of the things that it wouldn't accomplish last hour, right at the end of the hour. Like, it has nothing to do with ratings. It has nothing to do with drawing new fans. It won't generate new revenue, right? It's not something that is just going to change really anything. And by the way, eliminating the shift would actually be further reward for the current, you know, all or nothing pull happy approach that people don't seem to like, because you'll get more rewards by sticking with that, because you'll get some extra hits just by accident if teams aren't allowed to shift. And I'm talking about the infield shift. If we want more excitement in the game, why aren't we talking about restricting shifts in the outfield? What's more exciting than extra base hits? Doubles and triples, right? Oh, but we don't want to do that because that would be weird. We don't want the shift in the, we want the infield shifts to be restricted, but not the outfield. We're going to get into that. And also, by the way, why we're all making too big a deal out of this, because production, however you want to measure that, is as good as it has been in any era that's not been the steroid era. I'm going to back that up. Coming up next, Kevin Wheeler with you here on Sports Open Line on KMOX. All right, back in on Sports Open Line. Kevin Wheeler with you here on your home for the Cardinals, KMOX. I still want to follow up on this story about the shift in Major League Baseball. And again, first of all, Rob Manfred breaking the league's own. And he's not breaking any news, I guess, but he's making news by talking about the shift and these kind of things during the World Series. Mentioned on the Dan Patrick Show that that's something that they're looking at. And I don't think that banning the shift changes anything that matters when it comes to growing the game and making the sport better. If you want to try to create more action, right? If the idea here is more action, the one way to do that is to try to reduce strikeouts. Well, how do you, as a league, how do you reduce strikeouts? You can't change the approach of hitters. You can't tell pitchers that they're not allowed to throw 100 miles an hour anymore. You can't tell pitchers that they're not allowed to throw breaking pitches anymore. So how do you create more action? It's one thing. You shrink the strike zone. If you want to have more balls in play, now again, that would initially most likely lead to more walks. So you have to consider that part of it, right? If you're going to shrink the strike zone, you're going to have more walks, and walks are not considered action based on the people that I hear from. You know, the fact that, you know, nobody gets excited about a walk. Well, I mean, it's nice when your team has base runners, because base runners eventually lead to action, because nobody wants to walk multiple base runners, you know, consecutively or in the same inning. So they're going to end up throwing more strikes, and that's when you can lead to action. That's neither here nor there. But the only thing you can do to create more action is to reduce the swings and misses. Now, as we know, I mean, if you look at Major League Baseball, I think it's over the last 10 or 12 consecutive seasons, strikeouts per game have gone up, and they are at an all-time record for every year for the past 10 or 12 years. I mean, like, it's a new record every year. That changed in 2020, but probably only because we had such a small sample size. It was the first time, 2020 was the first time from one year to the next that the strikeout rate in baseball actually went down, I believe, since 2002 to 2003. So obviously it's been a long time, 16, 17 years since the strikeout rate went down from one year to the next. And that happened this year, but again, it's only 60 games, so I don't think it tells us very much. Banning the shift doesn't change the amount of contact being made. And as I mentioned earlier, it actually incentivizes the approach, the pull-happy, swing-for-the-fences approach that leads to more strikeouts. Because if you're a left-handed hitter in particular, and you are a heavy pull hitter who currently loses those singles because of the shift, you'll get some of those back without ever having to change a thing. You just keep on swinging, keep on pulling, and some of those balls you hit on the top instead of the balls you get underneath, those are base hits instead of outs. There's no incentive to adjust or change. And what I don't think people truly get when they talk about this is that the only people that complain about shifting are people with more of an old school baseball fandom. Well, those people are not the ones we're trying to appeal to. That's me. I'm an old school baseball guy. I'm not going anywhere. The idea here is to grow the sport. And the way you grow a sport isn't by catering to the old school people that aren't going anywhere anyway. You grow the sport by bringing in new people and new fans, casual fans, young fans aren't going to care about a few extra singles a week. They're not going to care about the shift. They want more action. Well, how do you get more action? And it's funny, you know, we talk about more action. We take out the steroid era because everything that's every offensive statistic in the steroid era is a little bit goofy because of the steroids. But outside of the steroid era, no previous era, unless you go back to the 1930s, had more doubles per game than you have in Major League Baseball right now. If you look at Major League Baseball over these last 5 or 6 years, the rate of doubles per game is higher than it was in the early 90s. It's higher than it was in the 80s, higher than it was in the 70s and the 60s and the 50s and the 40s. You got to get back to like the mid 30s. The last time that you had a rate of, you know, the doubles rate was where it is right now. Again, outside of the steroid era. Now, we can all go back to the steroid era and we're going to have a lot more doubles and triples. And the crazy thing, by the way, you know the home run rate, the home runs per game in Major League Baseball is actually higher now than it ever was during any point in the steroid era. In the year 2000 was the year that Major League Baseball had the highest home run per game rate. That was the highest in baseball history until recently. Yeah, it was in 2000 that rate was 1.17 home runs per game. This year it was 1.28. Last year, it was 1.39. Year before that, 1.15. Year before that, 1.26. So again, so the last 5 seasons have had the same rate or better, same home run rate per game or better than you had in at the peak of the steroid era. So home runs are at an all-time high. Doubles are higher than any previous era except for the steroid era. Now, triples, they're not what they used to be. But it's still the rate of triples in Major League Baseball right now is higher than it was in the 80s. It's higher than it was in the 70s. It's higher than it was in the 60s. So, and again, you got to go back to the 1930s for the last time that doubles and triples were kind of in this rate. Actually, triples is the wrong. I'm thinking of doubles and home runs. Triples are low. I mean, part of that is, you know, defensive positioning. Part of that is, you know, guys, you know, the outfielders having greater arms and covering more ground and all of this stuff. And all of these, the scouting reports are greater. But if you guys, if you want to create more action, why are we only talking about infield shifts? Why aren't we limiting outfield positioning? If we want more action, shouldn't we be increasing doubles and triples? The only way you can really do that is by limiting the outfield shifting and their ability to go by a scouting report. So if we really want this to be more about fun and action and excitement, then why isn't the discussion about restricting where outfielders can play? That's actually going to lead to more offense. That's going to lead to more triples. It's going to lead to some more doubles. You know, a lot of balls that used to be doubles and triples are outs now because of the defensive positioning in the outfield. Yet we only complain about this really small subsect of hitters that are extreme pull hitters who make outs, extreme left-handed pull hitters who make outs on pitches that on balls that would otherwise be singles. Why are we worried about the singles? If you want to change something, change the doubles and triples by limiting where outfielders can play. And I, by the way, I don't advocate for that at all. I'm just saying that's going to have more of the impact that you want if you're a person that's looking for more action. All right, stick around. We're going to break things off and go into some college football next up here on Sports Open Line on KMOX. All right, back in on Sports Open Line. Kevin Wheeler with you here on your home for the Cardinals, KMOX. Quick hitter here. I wanted to get into just a little bit of college football, and I don't have a ton of time to do this, but I know we spoke a little bit last night about Mizzou, Kentucky, with Howard Richards, and great conversation, and certainly got a pretty good perspective on what to expect here this weekend. This is a tough spot for Mizzou. You know, I think the win against LSU was fantastic. I mean, I don't want to delegitimize that or downplay it. That was huge. I mean, it's a huge first win for Coach Drinkwitz. It's symbolic because you beat a program. You know, you beat the defending national champs, even though, yeah, look, I know LSU might not be the exact same team that they were a year ago. They lost a lot of players to the NFL. They've got some, you know, projected high-end draft picks that have opted out of this season. Like, that's all fine and good. It's still LSU. They still have top recruiting classes. They still got NFL players up and down that roster. That was a really important win for Mizzou on a lot of different levels. This week is important for different reasons. You know, I didn't think they were going to have a chance at LSU. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I thought that LSU was going to win that by 3 touchdowns. So clearly, I underestimated what the offense was going to be capable of. And I'm going to try not to make that mistake again. But keep in mind, you know, that you can look at, you know, the Mizzou game against Tennessee as an example. You know, Tennessee held the offense in check, and Tennessee also has not looked very good these last couple of weeks. And, you know, I don't know that that tells me anything about the Tigers. I mean, I think the Tigers that are benefiting simply from getting more reps, right? I mean, it's a new coach with a new system, new players being asked to carry a big part of the load. And, you know, they're going to need, I think, you know, just the extra practice reps, the extra, you know, these last 2 weeks probably going to be a big deal for them. Now, Kentucky's going to be a tough opponent. This is not an unwinnable game. In fact, you know, the win against LSU, to me, changes the my viewpoint. Changes, I think, the bigger picture viewpoint. I don't look at Kentucky, South Carolina, Arkansas, Mississippi State, Vanderbilt as unknowns anymore. I mean, they are unknown outcomes, but they're all games to me that I've seen that you're capable of winning. Now, maybe you don't. Maybe you can. Maybe you can't win at the Swamp in Gainesville. You have had success against them in recent years, but obviously it's different. Maybe you can't beat Georgia. I don't know. Georgia's pretty good. But they haven't, you know, Georgia's not perfect. I don't think they have the best quarterback situation. I think, you know, the fact that Georgia's only lost to Alabama, and, you know, I don't think that that's a game you're going to count on to win. But the LSU win changed really all my entire perspective on this year, because before that I was looking at this going, yeah, this might be a 2 or 3 win season. And now I look at it and say, okay, it might still be that. I mean, I won't write that out. You could easily lose to Kentucky tomorrow. I mean, Kentucky's is very good. And then if you follow that with losses to Florida and Georgia, which are going to be the likely outcomes based on what Vegas is going to have for those games, yeah, you could be sitting there at 1-5 before you play the last 4 games. And then you look at, okay, maybe you split the last four and now you're there. But at least now they're, you know, after the LSU performance, my eyes have been opened in that I can actually see that 500 season being possible, or you know, a 5-win season being possible and all this. And that's good. I mean, I didn't have high expectations coming in because this is it's a brutally tough schedule. I mean, you looked at four games right off the bat. I did. I looked at Alabama, LSU, Florida, and Georgia. I'm like, okay, four losses. Obviously, you won one of those games, but then you lost one of the others, so it's still evened out. What will it be moving forward? Well, maybe we'll get a better answer to that tomorrow. I mean, if you can pull off a win against Kentucky, doesn't mean I think the chances are better for Florida or Georgia, but it looks like, you know, then you're looking down at South Carolina, Arkansas, Mississippi State, Vanderbilt, and like, all right, maybe you can get three out of those four if you're playing well. None, you know, all of those teams, these teams are all very similar in that they have questions that are still being answered, and we didn't have normal circumstances leading up to the season. But I think tomorrow is going to be a good indicator. And if Mizzou loses tomorrow, that's not the end of the world. It's just a good game that can maybe help us understand a little bit more what to expect following the games against Florida and Georgia these next two games. So it's not really over 2 weeks. It's over 3 weeks, but still over the next two games following tomorrow. All right, coming up next, quick hitter on the NFL, and then we'll wrap things up here on Sports Open Line on KMOX. All right, getting ready to wrap it up here on Sports Open Line on KMOX, taking you up to the top of the hour. Just want a quick hitter on the National Football League. I mean, obviously, we just got the news right as the show was starting. I think it was right at the top of the 7 o'clock hour, right before we were coming into the conversation with Brad Lidge, that Antonio Brown is signing with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And all I can say is good luck to them. It will never cease to amaze me the risks that teams will take with people that are certainly questionable in terms of character. And by the way, in the case of Antonio Brown, look, I understand, you know, I understand mental illness is real and it's serious and he's had problems, and hopefully on a human level, he's figured out a way to treat that and keep, you know, to get his life kind of back in order. But, you know, the off the field problems aren't just quote unquote temperament problems. I mean, we're talking about legal problems. You know, he pled guilty to a couple of different crimes. He's still being investigated by the league for sexual misconduct. And then you throw on top of that that he's also been an on-field problem the last few places he's been. I mean, you look at the way that he got himself out of Pittsburgh. I mean, it was awful there the way that ended. It did not go well or end well in Oakland. It did not go well or end well in New England. And again, I hope that, like, off the field, he's figured out through some treatment and other possible, you know, just behavioral changes, figured out how to be a more balanced person. Hopefully things are going better for him in that regard. But boy, you know, I guess if you're looking at it from Tampa's perspective, if it goes badly, you just cut him and, you know, you're back where you started. But apparently Tom Brady was the one pushing for it. You don't know how long you're going to have Tom Brady around, and I'm sure he wants to maximize their team's chance of winning a Super Bowl while he still has time left in his career. And you know, I guess that having Mike Evans and Evans and Godwin and Gronkowski there, I know O.J. Howard's on the injured list, but you know, they would normally have another weapon there. But I wonder if this is just a flyer and say, hey, listen, what do we lose? If it doesn't work out, you cut them and you move on and you go forward from there. But that's the biggest news. That's the biggest news from the NFL here on a Friday night. And I figured just kind of spend a couple seconds getting into that. We don't have a whole lot of time to get deeper on that. That's the kind of team I think you would want to take the chance on, right? Is a team that's got a good bit of veteran presence, that's got a coach with, you know, and by the way, Bruce Arians and Antonio Brown have had a few like minor spat type things where AB took exception to things that Bruce Arians said here and there. I'm sure they'll get over that. But you've got a pretty stable coach there. Obviously, you've got veterans all over that locker room that can help try to balance things out. So if you're going to try something, that's the team to do it. Now, the bigger question we all have is at what point does a guy wear out second chances? Because he's on about his fifth chance right now. And again, he may still end up at some point facing another suspension from the league. We're just not at that point right now. All right, we'll have obviously more across the board next week. I just looked up Game 3 of the World Series. You got Dodgers and Rays going at it right now, and the Dodgers off to a pretty good start. They're up 3-0 right now, headed to the bottom of the third inning. So we'll look forward to picking things back up on the World Series side next week. You guys have a great weekend. Thanks for checking in here on KMOX.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.